Cycle. Welcome to the 1 o'clock No Sour Haha Funny Hour. No Sour Happy Fun Time Haha Power Hour. Welcome to the No Sour Fun Time Haha Power Hour.
Oh, she did it.
I got it.
I think she's got it. By George, she's got it.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin. Welcome to the No Sour Ha Ha Fun Time Power Hour. This day is just flying by.
It really is.
Only an hour left. At 1:30, our friend Chris Drosner will be back to talk all things beer.
Yep.
And anything update? It's actually been a little over a month, so he sent me a list of different things that we can talk about, including mega cans. I know this is what Jane wants.
Oh.
Mega cans of IPA beer.
Yay. I'm so excited.
All right. But for our first segment, the 50th annual Skills USA Wisconsin State Leadership and Skills Conference is next week, both on Tuesday, April 25th and Wednesday, April 26th at the Alliance Center in Madison. And here to talk more about the conference and Skills USA is Jessa Dames, who is the Executive Director of Skills USA Wisconsin. How you doing, Jessa?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
So did you say there's a thunderstorm where you are?
There is, yes. So I am having all kinds of technological difficulties today.
Isn't that just always fun when you're like, right before the show, literally there was 2 minutes before the show started and my computer froze and I was like, wow, this is great. So you're in good company.
But, yep.
Welcome to the show.
So I get it.
So I guess for people who are not familiar, what is Skills USA Wisconsin?
Well, Skills USA is a career and technical student organization. We call them CTSOs for short, and it's devoted to students who are planning to enter the trades and skilled and technical service occupations. So we serve middle school, high school, and college students. We've been here in Wisconsin for a little over 50 years, and we've also served students nationwide. And we're considered a member organization, so our students actually engage with Skills USA through their school's career and tech ed classes. And then they'll have a teacher or two in their school who serves as their advisor.
So basically it's definitely in the trades. And so what does that all include? Because I feel like sometimes the trades get referred to as obviously like an alternative to going to a four-year institution and stuff like that. But like what all falls under that umbrella when people say trades?
That's a great question. We actually serve 11 different career clusters. We have competitions in 11 different career clusters. So it's really, if you can dream it, we offer it.
Huh.
So it's anything from architecture and construction to manufacturing to transportation, like the true trades, right? And then engineering and human services. So cosmetology, barbering, education, IT. So it's really everything. It's an all-encompassing umbrella.
So then with Skills USA, obviously the conference is next week and we'll get to that in a second. But as far as other programs and services that are offered with the member, like the memberships, what can people expect, like if they were working through their school, of what could be available to them?
Sure. So we're built around what we call the framework. It's a framework of skills that business and industry leaders across the country have identified as being absolutely integral to workforce ready employees. So it's encompassing personal, workplace, and technical skills. So not, you know, the skills to get a job, but also to keep a job, to retain that job. So we offer leadership opportunities. We offer the chance to get involved in a student's local community. We offer chapter recognition. We offer the career competitions. So that's probably what students get most excited about. Mm-hmm. We do a series of competitions at the local and like larger regional level, and then obviously at the state level, which is what we're preparing for next week, and then national and even international competition, kind of like the Olympics for skilled careers.
Awesome. Well, speaking of next week, so the opening ceremony and day one is next Tuesday. And so what goes into this conference?
Well, on Tuesday, we're going to join together for our opening ceremony, and students will participate in, you know, orientation briefings about their contest. They might take written tests. We'll have a social for students to get together and just have some time to enjoy being together from across the state. We have exhibitor booths, so we anticipate about 40 different educational business and industry partners who are going to be there on Tuesday. And then on Wednesday, we really kick off our hands-on competitions. So there's a couple of career competitions where you might see students doing the hands-on skilled work on Tuesday afternoon, but most of them are going to be Wednesday morning. And we're going to actually hold over 80 different competitions all at one time.
Oh, wow.
Across the Alliant Energy Center. And we'll have some at Madison College as well. So the student, you could walk the competition space and see carpentry contests, cosmetology, first aid. You could see robotics and automation. I mean, it is truly spectacular.
That is, so basically, like, so how many people are in each competition, would you say? Like, do you have to qualify, even to get to state, if that's what we refer to it as, how many participants are there in each competition that, like, fills out? Because I imagine that it can't be each event heat. I have so many questions of how the terminology. And so how many, like, we'll start with there. How many people are in each event?
It completely depends.
Okay.
So welding tends to be our largest. Welding is huge here in Wisconsin. And so we have about 60-some welding contestants who will be participating at Madison College. So that's a massive contest. And then we have, you know, our smaller contests. So we might have 12 in photography, for example. So it really just depends on the student's registration. And we try to work with as few as, you know, two or three teams or individuals in a contest to as many as, you know, 60 plus.
And then for people who win, like, what does it mean to win? Is there prizes? Is it just recognition? Is it something you put on your resume?
Absolutely, all of that.
Okay.
So anybody who wins, so first, second, and third, we award them medals, so bronze, silver, gold medals, during our award ceremony Wednesday night. And there's also prizes for contests, scholarships for contests. We have state and national industry partners who donate some pretty significant, you know, toolkits and items. At the national level, for example, a school can win, their school contestant winner can win a motorcycle in the motorcycle service contest. So we're talking some pretty large scale prizes. And then anybody who wins at state is invited to go on to that national competition that I just referenced. And that will be taking place in Atlanta in June.
Nice. And so then at the nationals, is it basically the same except just bigger and with people from all over the country?
Yeah, it's basically like state on steroids. It's a massive week-long conference with multiple day competitions, and you can see students from every state and the U.S. territories as well.
Oh, wow. This sounds really cool.
It really does.
So as far as when it comes to next week, is everyone who is going to be participating already picked and chosen? And so as far as anyone listening now, they can always just go watch, or what is kind of people's ability to participate in the event next week?
Well, at this point, everyone's chosen.
Yes.
They had to either qualify or register ahead of time. But we would love to have observers. I know we have a couple of schools who are still choosing some students to come and spectate and learn more about different contest areas so that they can get more involved next year. So I highly recommend, if there's anybody out there who would love to come and check this out to learn more, please come. You know, it's free to the public to come and observe the competitions. I would suggest coming Wednesday morning from about 8 to noon. That's where you're going to really see the most action, the most excitement. And you can get a better feel for what the scope of this conference really is, because it's hard to explain until you see it in real life.
Our guest is Jessa Dames. She's the executive director of Skills USA Wisconsin, talking about their competition in Madison next week. Jessa, I have so many questions about the welding competition. It can't be just speed, right? It's got to be the quality of the weld, I'm assuming.
Absolutely. So, like, if we're using welding as our example, we have industry partners who facilitate the contest, they build the contest, everything is set to the American Welding Society standards. So they have a series of stations, and students actually have to perform various aspects of welding using different welding methods and then producing a final product. So you're being judged on your dress, right? Are you in your safety gear? You're being dressed on your resume. So every contest requires a hard copy resume. So it's almost like a job interview mixed in with a contest. And then they're being judged on their method and that final piece, you know, the quality of it, et cetera.
Nice. So as far as the programs and the member schools across Wisconsin, I guess two-part question. First part, where should parents or students be looking in their school to see if they have a Skills USA chapter? And if they don't, part two, what could they do to start the process of getting a Skills USA chapter in their school?
Well, what's fantastic is we do have about 200 different member schools across Wisconsin right now. So at the middle and high school level, and that's not even including the college side because it's a whole different piece, right? So a lot of schools, this probably already exists for them, and they just need to connect with those career and technical education classes in their school. And if they don't have a Skills USA chapter yet, they can connect with the state office. We actually have a contract role, an engagement coordinator who works directly with new chapters and really helps them every step of the way. So, you know, the first step a school needs is some interested students and an advisor to lead them. And then I always recommend coming to see a regional or state level competition like what's coming up next week, again, to get students enthusiastic because students are the driving force behind this. They will go back and they will get their friends excited, right? They will get their classmates excited, and they will spread the good word about this organization and how to get involved. So that's a fantastic way for folks to come and learn a little bit more and determine whether they want to start a chapter in their school.
Well, this all sounds very cool. Where can people get more information? Which website would you send them to?
So you can go to www.skillsusa, SKILLSUSA-WI.org.
Perfect. All right. Well, we will definitely link that in our show notes on asgoeswisconsin.com/listen, where you can always find every episode from every show. But Jessa Dames, thank you so much for letting us know about this and have a great time next week. Hopefully you have a great turnout and some very exciting welding competitions.
I'm stoked.
Thank you. Well, you're all welcome to come and observe, and I appreciate your time.
All right. Thank you so much. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back in a minute. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madinair. And now the sun is shining.
For a bit, I was checking the radar. So a lot of it has moved out past us, but I believe there is another round coming later.
Today?
Yeah. Yeah, we're not, I don't think we're done quite yet.
When is the next heat wave? Do we have one on the radar?
June.
You're just making that up.
I haven't looked that far ahead, but it's going to, like, I mean, next week, I think it's going to be in the 50s, so.
All right, that's better.
That's kind of
where
we're...
It's not the 80s, but it's...
No, it's kind of where we're supposed to be.
It's where we're supposed to be. Yeah. But those couple days where it was so nice. I got a little bold yesterday and didn't wear a coat and just had a sweater. It was a mistake.
Yeah. It's Wisconsin.
And so it's certainly not out of layer weather yet.
Not yet.
So I don't even know where to go with this stat, but I just found it interesting. And I also think it is a good reminder of the difference between a million and a billion, especially coming off of the conversation with CJ and taxes and wealthy people. Because I think it was a week ago or 2 weeks ago that, like, the richest Wisconsinites that made Forbes list, it was 9 of them, I think.
Yeah.
And we didn't really talk about it, but, you know, they exist. But in,
well, we weren't on the list. So
we were not, we were not on the list. Nor will we probably ever be on the list. Unless Mike comes up with some brilliant entrepreneurial product.
It could happen.
I don't know if it's going to...
Not a billion.
I don't know, a billion. I don't feel like I'm cut from the cloth of like being money motivated enough to like have that in my future.
That's okay.
So wrap your head around this. There are as many millionaires in New York City as there are people living in Anaheim, California.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what's the population of Anaheim?
300, where is it? I just lost it. 340,000.
So there are 340,000 millionaires in New York City.
Yep. According to a report from investment migration firm Henley & Partners, the Big Apple is home to 340,000 millionaires and has retained its title of the wealthiest city in the world, boasting around 50,000 more millionaires than second place, Tokyo.
Wow.
And it's also interesting if they just put the limit on New York City, which granted is big, it's the five boroughs, but there's also the people who live in Jersey and Connecticut and like the tri-state area who also have a lot of money and they just commute into New York.
Right.
But I thought that was interesting. But then when you take it to billionaires, the Bay Area has the most billionaires and they have more than New York with 63 compared to 58. So just even those numbers, the amount of there's hundreds of thousands of millionaires in New York, but also in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And in the two richest areas of the country, there's only 63 billionaires in the Bay Area and 58 billionaires in New York. And it just is like, I picked it out when I was skimming the news just because it felt like, I think sometimes for those of us who don't have, who are not millionaires, when we think about a billion versus a million, it's kind of hard to wrap your head around.
Well, for me, it's kind of the same thing, right?
But it's so not.
No, it's not.
It's so not at all. And sometimes it takes, I think, like visualizations and graphs to understand like a million seconds versus a billion seconds is a huge amount of time that like difference between those two things.
Yes.
And so the amount that the amount, how many fewer billionaires we actually have. And that opens the gate for, should there even be billionaires? That's a whole other conversation that we don't have time for.
How much is too much?
But if you would like a part of a $700 million settlement, I did this last night as I was watching the Bucks game, but you know, I know you're not still on Facebook.
No.
But you were on Facebook at some point between May 2007 and December 2022, right?
Yeah, I jumped off Facebook in 2019 after I found out that they were selling all of our information to Cambridge Analytica.
All right, so you can submit a claim.
Really?
You can submit a claim for your share of the $725 million privacy settlement. So you have until August to request your piece of the deal that resolves a class action over Facebook giving 87 million users data to Cambridge Analytica.
Son of a gun. Look at that.
So if you would like, I submitted it last night because it was easy to do. Basically, you have to put your name and your contact information, but then, and like your user ID for Facebook. So since you deleted yours, you may have a little bit more work of a problem. But I have no idea how much it will be for.
I'm sure tens and tens of dollars.
I mean, if it was $100, I'd take it.
Well, sure. Why not?
Our friend who we just saw in San Diego, that's her like hobby, is finding different class action lawsuits she can jump onto.
Seriously.
And so she's constantly getting checks for like $5. $15. I think the biggest one she's ever gotten is like $38.
Oh, wow.
She's like, but it adds up.
It's a whole different kind of couponing.
Exactly. But we'll link this to today's notes because I can't imagine between that time, between 2007 and 2022.
That's a lot of
folks. There were many people who weren't on Facebook, at least in some portion of that time. So if you would like your piece, we will link the claim submission button on today's notes on asgoeswisconsin.com/listen. And for now, we're going to take another break. And when we come back, the Beer Baron himself is back to talk about a variety of different things, all pertaining to beer.
Of course.
Of course. Chris Drosner will be here. Stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere, and he is the Beer Baron, Chris Drosner, executive editor at Milwaukee Magazine, and has been writing the Beer Baron column for Wisconsin State Journal for the last 11 years. And he is here, like he always is, once a month to give us some updates on beer and beer culture in the Brew State. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, of course. It's been, because we were supposed to do last week and I was gone, so it's been a little bit longer than usual, but as we're through the winter beers, I'm assuming, and so we're kind of looking forward to beer events and such, and so I saw that there was the Craft Beer Top 50 that was published this week or released this week.
Yeah, so every year the Brewers Association, which is like the craft beer trade group, I guess, like they do advocacy and lobbying and stuff like that. Every year they release their members' kind of production ranks. So like the top selling craft brewery, and then on down, they do a top 50. And it's always interesting to watch like where, you know, the Wisconsin breweries fall in this. And there hasn't been a lot of shakeup in this, but it's always interesting to look at, you know, the number one, and of course, I guess we should note that there are two really, really big breweries in Wisconsin that don't fall into this category, because you have to be a craft brewer, which means you have to be independent of essentially the macro brewers. So the Miller breweries actually in Wisconsin don't count, and neither does the City Brewery in La Crosse, which does a ton of contract brewing. But that's a very large brewery that would probably be in the top 10, you know, nationally, if it were part of these rankings. They used to do rankings of all breweries, which was interesting to watch, but then they stopped doing that because so many of the craft brewers were actually falling out because they were being bought by these larger, often international companies. So like Founders out of Michigan is owned by Mahu San Miguel, which is a international brewing company. Goose Island out of Chicago was bought almost more than 10 years ago, I guess now, was bought by Anheuser-Busch InBev. So those large corporate-owned breweries aren't part of this, but so you kind of get basically a sense of like the kind of where the smaller breweries are at. But I mean, some of these are pretty big, like New Glarus is the biggest one in Wisconsin. They're at number 12, same as last year. And that one's pretty remarkable because, of course, they only sell in Wisconsin. So
yeah,
all of that beer is you know, being sold right here. The other state brewers on this list are Minhas in Monroe at number 15, and then Stevens Point Brewery in Stevens Point at number 19. So, you know, the one thing that the Brewers Association does not exclude for is kind of quality, I guess.
Be a question. So are these rankings based off of like sales or off of like tasting?
Nope. It's purely by brewing volume. So,
oh, okay.
It's yeah, right. And they don't want to get into like the actual attributes of the beer being made. Yeah, they just and you know, it's interesting to kind of put this into context. The number one brewery on this list, nationwide, is Yuengling, out of Pennsylvania. And of course, they don't sell their beer here in Wisconsin yet. But if you've been basically anywhere east of here, you know how like Yuengling is kind of like the spotted cow in over across most of the Eastern Seaboard and the Southeast and stuff. So, and then number two is Boston Beer, which makes Sam Adams and a lot of seltzer and kind of other stuff.
Sweet, Sam Adams is still considered a craft brewery?
It is an independent company that makes a lot of different products, and brewing is part of it. Boston Beer also owns Dogfish Head. So there are a lot of like complicated corporate kind of parentage and connections that are in this list, and also that are not in this list, because you know, like up until recently, Bell's and Bell's out of Michigan, which makes Two Hearted Ale, one of my favorite beers, and New Belgium, which makes a Fat Tire and a whole bunch of other the Voodoo Ranger series. Really, I mean, both of those breweries were in the top 10 of this list every year, and they are now gone. Founders was another one that is, but so that basically you get kicked out of this list if you sell out, putting the air quotes on that, because of course they're doing what they think is necessary for their business. Mm-hmm. But it can be very, very complicated. And there are a lot of kind of independent holding companies that have a bunch of craft breweries. So like number four on the list is Duvel Mortgat, which is a Belgian company, but they do not make like macro beer. They are not considered a large brewer, and their brands are Firestone Walker, Boulevard, which is sold here in Wisconsin, and Omegon, which is based out of New York and is sold here too. It's kind of a Belgian style, kind of a niche brand. So it's very good.
There you go.
Kind of a weird list to look at, but I mean, you know, New Glarus being at number 12, just selling beer in Wisconsin up against these, you know, really big companies is pretty remarkable.
It's pretty impressive. Yeah, that is.
Yeah, none of the. Oh, one other interesting thing on this list, right behind New Glarus is Athletic Brewing, which is out of Connecticut, and that is the non-alcoholic brand. So they.
I've had that. That's really. They're really. That's really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they've exploded in the last 3 or 4 years, I'd say.
That's interesting. So they only sell non-alcoholic beer, and they're number. Yep. They're already number 13 on this list as far as volume.
Number 13. Yeah. Yeah.
Are there people, do you think there's companies that are angry about it because they think it's not actually beer? They should have their own category.
That's an interesting question. And this used to be a list that was like everybody would get all fired up about it because it was kind of like the standings of the entire industry.
Yeah.
Right? Because you had Lagunitas was in the top five, and you know, all these different breweries that were considered, you know, like the kind of standards of craft beer for so long, and they one by one, almost all, like not almost all, like you know, Sierra Nevada is number three. That one is kind of the biggest old line traditional craft brewery that's still left. But I mean, you know, I mentioned Lagunitas, Founders, Bell's, a lot of the ones that grew so much during the craft beer boom in the early, I guess, late aughts and early tens. Teens, I don't know.
Whatever.
You know,
last 20 years
because they're owned by big companies that aren't considered craft brewers. So,
well, super interesting.
It's a fraught. Like, there's a lot of semantics kind of in this thing, but it's still interesting to kind of see where, you know, your like our state's breweries kind of stack up to the other ones.
Well, especially because when you look at it, there's some states that don't have any at all, and so you can definitely tell in California. And New York and stuff, as far as where states actually have some you know, more than one, but there's some states that don't have any. But we're talking to Chris Drosner, who is the executive editor at Milwaukee Magazine and the author of the Beer Baron column for the Wisconsin State Journal. And you wrote a column last week about big ass cans. And it's funny because I feel like at we went to the Padres Brewers game when they blew them out in San Diego. Nice. And first, the Petco Stadium's really cool. Petco Park's really cool. But also, we were commenting on how, like, you can't get small, like, 12-ounce cans in baseball parks anymore. Like, you only get, like, the only things they're serving, especially in the self-serve, is 24-ounce cans. And then I saw your article where that's, like, not even just at baseball parks, but in a lot of places, that is, like, the trend of having a big beer.
Yeah, well, that's actually one of the things that's driving this from the kind of convenience aspect is the placement in venues like this. One of the sources I talked to for this mentioned music venues as being a really nice place to buy these bigger cans. The ones that we're talking about are 19.2 ounces, so it's a little it's only about 3 ounces bigger than the. You know, like the tall boy, the standard tall boys that you might get in a bar or something. But it's not quite as big as the 24s or like the, there's even 32 ounce cans.
It's too much.
Like, you know,
it's going to get warm by the end.
Yeah. Right. But that idea of not having to go back, to get twice,
yeah.
You know, like basically this is almost two beers or in the case of the 24 ounce, it is exactly two beers. And so you don't have to worry about, you know, losing, you know, missing an inning, half inning of the game or whatever to go back to the, or part of the set, you know, at a concert, you know, to go get another beer. So, but these cans are really taking off in like convenience stores, especially that's the, like Quick Trip in, at least in Wisconsin here is really driving this trend. And just to kind of give you an idea of like how much this is growing, like from 2018 to 2021, 19.2 ounce cans doubled in volume, and then from 2021 to just last year it doubled again, so really kind of taking off. And the reason I wrote about this is because Wisconsin brewers are starting to get into it. Carbon 4 came out with the first one. Let's see, what was it? I'm not sure, it was a few years ago, so they were kind of early on it, but when it was still, you know, kind of growing, but not quite as ubiquitous as it is now. Just this month, Lake Louie Brewing, based in Verona now, and Lakefront out of Milwaukee, both rolled out 19.2 ounce cans. And they say they're, you know, consumers like them because they, you know, the key thing is these are single serve cans. They don't come in like multi-packs. So you're just buying one kind of big can of beer. Almost always IPA too. For some reason, well, IPAs tend to be higher alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see these cans alongside where they are in these convenience stores or sometimes grocery stores, they're with like the 40 ounces of, you know, malt liquor if they still carry those, or like a 40 ounce Modelo or a 24 ounce can of High Life or something. So, you know, I think there's kind of a convenience impulse buy kind of maybe bang for alcohol buck is part of that. Lakefront's beer that it's putting, it's just doing one beer in these and it's a double IPA. It's like 9.something%, I think, ABV. So, you know, and somebody's sitting down presumably to drink
that
whole thing. So that's a lot of double IPA. And I do think there's something to that. You know, they tend to be pretty cheap. They're almost all under $3 a piece. And that's a little bit more per ounce than you get with like a six pack or something, but you get a chance to just have this one beer or try it. You know, I think there is something to like, oh, I kind of wanted to try that. I've been wanting to try that beer, or I kind of want to drink that tonight or like right now even, you know? So I think it's a little bit more immediate of a package, and we're going to start to see a lot more of these.
It reminds me when I was a bartender in college, and the bar I worked at was a beer bar, It was owned by a brewery. And we had a double IPA called Denogonizer that was 14%. And for some reason, we wouldn't. So we wouldn't sell it as a pitcher, but we would sell it as like a 14-ounce cup. And if you can imagine getting a 14-ounce cup of a 14% beer and college students, bad combination. It's like drinking, like chugging a bottle of wine.
Exactly. I mean, that is wine strength, essentially.
So, oh, my God. Yeah.
You got to watch out.
You got to watch out. All right.
Three glasses of wine in one.
All right. Well, when we come back, Chris Drosner will still be here. We're going to hear who won the Milwaukee Magazine beer bracket. So stay tuned for that. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
We are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else. The afterworld. A world of never-ending happiness. You can always see the sun. Day or night. So when you call up that shrink in Beverly Hills, you know the one. Doctor, everything will be alright. Instead of asking them how much of your time is left, ask them how much of your mind, baby. Cause in this life, things are much harder.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madnair. And we are joined by Chris Drosner, who is the executive editor of Milwaukee Magazine and writes the Beer Baron column for Wisconsin State Journal. And last month... Yes, last month. It was a month ago already, March Madness. Oh, my the time.
Yes.
And you guys did a beer bracket in Milwaukee Magazine. I think that's the last time you were here. We were talking about it. You had just launched it, and we said you could go vote. And so you have it. Like, give it a little build up. Like, who was in the final four?
Yeah, so the final four was, let's see, we had Third Space, Happy Place. We had Lakefront, River West, Stein. Those were the two finalists.
Okay.
And it was Milwaukee Brewing's Louise Demise, which, of course, is an Eagle Park production these days. And I believe the fourth was Eagle Park's set list.
I've had two of the four.
I'd have to double check that.
I don't think I've had the Eagle Park's ones.
Yeah. Yeah. Good beer. Good beer is all.
Good beer.
I mean, you know, solid stuff. And I mean, when we set out to do this, I kind of figured that this was a pitched battle going in, because we do a Reader's Choice, you know, as part of our Best of Milwaukee, coverage that we do every year. We've done, like, you know, craft beer or beer stuff, all the years that I've been part of it. And there's one beer that always wins, or one brewery that always wins in Milwaukee, and it's Lakefront. And it was a pretty close battle.
Okay.
Like, Happy Place put up a good fight. I think it was within like maybe 20 votes or 30 votes or something.
Oh wow, that is really close.
But River West Nine pulled it out, and we had a nice little live stream with Russ Klisch from Lakefront and Andy Gale from Third Space. Both of them came on a Facebook live stream that we did and talked about their beer, and it was really cool.
That's funny.
I did a little dramatic reveal where I like pulled the sleeve off of a can that was in, and it was, oh, that's good. I thought that was really clever. Thought of that myself.
So it's interesting what you say, that Lakefront always wins. Do you think it's just people's emotional connection to that brewery, and so it's not even necessarily, because like even the example you gave of the four, I know Happy Place, it's one of my favorite IPAs. I know River West Stein. I didn't know the other two.
Kristen, hold on. Happy Place is not
pale
an IPA.
Pale ale?
Yeah. It is a hop forward pale ale, but it is not an IPA.
Fine.
That matters. Within the beer world.
This is why I stay out of these conversations, because I'm going to say something, the verbiage wrong, and I'm going to get scolded.
All right,
I should not have.
It does
I should
taste
not have well, actually, do there, but
it tastes a little like an IPA. Whatever. It is very hoppy, and so I like Happy Place. So is it just because it's just been around? You think it like in your hypothesis as far as why people default to Lakefront? Do you think it's one because their beer is so good, or has more to do with people's connection to a place that's been around for a while?
Well, it's all that stuff. But I mean, the thing that I probably look at is Lakefront and River West Dine both have been around for 30 years. They celebrated their 30th anniversary late last year. And Third Space has grown really quickly and is a great brewery in its own right. But they opened in 2017, I believe.
Yeah, so they're maybe a lot younger.
So, yeah, yeah, and you know that really matters when you're talking about kind of like I a lot of my beer interaction with beer people is like with beer people, you know, but I think for people who aren't as into the beer culture and the scene and everything, they know that they've seen this beer for 30 years. They've probably had it many, many times. It's a good beer, so you like it. And so I think that's probably it. I mean, you know, these are two very different beers to put head to head.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the conceit of this bracket is you know, you end up having awkward kind of pairings and stuff like that. And it's we try to have fun with it. But yeah, congrats to Lakefront again.
Will you do it again next year, or will you reinvent the wheel and do some other kind of bracket?
We are in talks. I don't think we'll just do exactly this again, but I was talking last night to our associate publisher who kind of is the cheerleader for these things. And I'm like, maybe we should do just like we could do a lager bracket. We could do an IPA bracket. And I think she was kind of like,
That's a lot.
Maybe. So we'll see.
All right. Well, summer is around the corner, even though it's heat waves. We don't know when that's coming. But any beer events coming up in across the state or in Milwaukee that you're looking forward to?
Yeah, there's one in particular that is that I'm a big fan of. It's coming up on May 20th, and it is called Lager and Friends. And this is put on by Gathering Place Brewery in River West, Milwaukee. And it's, as the name suggests, it is entirely lagers, and a lot of the breweries that are at the festival are kind of lager focused breweries. They tend to have at least a pretty good handful of breweries that are from out of state that don't normally sell their beer here. So that's kind of a special appeal for folks who want to try really different things. And lager is a broad category of beer that, you know, when we talk about kind of like standard beer, again, air quotes, working great on the radio, but, you know, we think of like macro lager, like High Life, which I love High Life.
I love High Life.
Don't want to besmirch High Life. But, you know, that's the kind, you know, the standard American lager. And, but it really does have the same broad range of kind of flavors and different profiles and aromas and stuff that you find in all beer. So it's not very limited. I mean, certainly those are good beers and crisp and refreshing. But a lot of them, there's a lot more range within lager than a lot of people think. And this is a fun. It's a relatively small festival, and it's at Old Heidelberg Park in which is attached to the Bavarian Beer House in Glendale. So it's like this really huge, like park, it reminds me of like a German beer garden,
yeah.
You know, and there's tables everywhere. There's great food, kind of traditional Germanic stuff. And there's a nice, covered area where the brewer's set up, and there's a lot of space. There's plenty of space. And
I got to cut you off because we're going to run out of time, but Chris Drosner, always lovely to have you on. That event sounds awesome. We will send me the link to that so I can put it in today's show notes, but, we will have you back again next month, where hopefully the weather will be better, more lagers will be drank, and it's always a joy to have you here. All right, we'll be back tomorrow. This has been As Goes Wisconsin.
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.